it's more than a culture clash.
We don't care what you do with your life. We don't care what you do in your bedroom. Why do you care so much about what we do? I don't get it.
It's about belief.
Bullying Christians is wrong, too.
The Christian voice has been hijacked. And Jesus has been hijacked.
It's about who decides how some Michigan citizens get to live and work.
We don't believe that a Christian bookstore should be forced to hire some guy who claims to be a woman and wants to wear a dress to work and use the women's restroom.
And how we define family.
You can't argue with crazy. So if they don't want to deal with the reality that our families are here, they're here to stay, we're not going away. That's their choice, but we're not going away.
From Michigan Radio, this is Unequal by Law, Being Gay in Michigan. Lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people do not have the same rights as straight people in Michigan. It's legal to treat them differently, refuse them service, refuse them a job because they're gay. A vote of the people amended the state constitution banning same-sex couples from marrying or being recognized for any of the advantages that come with marriage or a civil union. And for many Michigan voters, that's just fine. They have religious or moral objections to gay people or their lifestyles. They see LGBT people as a threat to traditional marriage, to traditional families. During this hour, we're going to take a look at some of those issues. From Michigan Radio, this is Unequal by Law, Being Gay in Michigan. I'm Lester Graham. As we mentioned, in Michigan, if you're gay or lesbian, you cannot get married. In 2004, voters approved a state constitutional amendment defining marriage as being between one man and one woman and ban recognition of gay marriage or a similar union. That can affect children. Here's how. That phrase, similar union, has been interpreted by the state to mean LGBT partners who adopt children cannot both be legal parents. That makes providing a secure future for the kids they're raising very difficult.
Tell me what a lion says.
Boy.
Roar.
This little boy, Lucas, is 2 years old.
What's a cow say?
Moo.
Moo.
And Lucas has two dads.
My name is Kent Love Ramirez.
I'm Diego Love Ramirez.
And we've been together for just over 10 years, and we married in a religious ceremony 5 years ago, and just legally married in Washington, D.C. I work at Michigan State University.
And I'm an airline pilot.
Kent and Diego are the only parents Lucas has ever known, but the state of Michigan does not recognize one of them as a parent.
Both of us were present when Lucas was born. Diego cut the umbilical cord. I was the first person to hold Lucas. We left the hospital with him. We were selected by the birth family to be Lucas's adoptive parents, yet the state does not recognize that. And that's incredibly unfortunate, first and foremost, for Lucas, but certainly secondly, unfortunate for us.
The Love Ramirez couple did not want to reveal which one of them is actually the adoptive parent of Lucas. They've worked hard to make sure they both can be a father to him. They could afford the lawyers to help them jump through a lot of legal hoops to make sure that they can take him to the doctor, pick him up from daycare, ensure that this little boy's future is as secure as legally possible. They're still concerned about what might happen to Lucas if the adoptive parent were to die. So they both want to be adoptive parents. They just want to make sure they're there for their boy. Kent Love Ramirez says that's all any parent wants.
I do believe that a loving environment is what's necessary to raise a healthy, well-adjusted child, whether that be a single parent, whether that be a heterosexual two-parent family, a homosexual two-parent family, grandparents, whatever. It's all about the loving environment you provide. But with that said, it is also very difficult for us to be in a two-parent family and not have that recognized.
Even with the legal workaround the Love Ramirez family has, if one of the fathers were to die, a judge could see things differently and grant guardianship to grandparents or someone else with legal standing. The parent who is not legally the adoptive parent could lose Lucas, and Lucas could end up losing both of his dads. That was a concern for another LGBT couple about their children.
My name is Ryan.
How old are you?
Three.
What's your name?
Jacob.
Yeah. How old are you?
I'm being. My name is Nolan.
And how old are you?
Four.
These three little kids were excited about showing me their toys. They only know they have a happy home with their two moms.
I am April DeBoer and my daughter, Ryan DeBoer Rouse.
And I'm Jane Rouse, and my sons are Nolan DeBoer Rouse and Jacob DeBoer Rouse.
They wanted to jointly adopt their children to better protect the kids' futures. The state of Michigan argued, no way, they can't, they're not married. Their case has become the most anticipated development in lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people's rights in Michigan. It's in the federal court now and challenges the state's constitutional amendment banning same-sex marriage. When I get to the family's house, the kids are about to eat lunch. Peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. They all passed on the ham and cheese sandwiches. And as a kid, why wouldn't you? I mean, it's peanut butter and jelly, right? Anyway, their mothers explained they had no intention to challenge the gay marriage ban. Jane Rouse says that's something the judge suggested.
So what Judge Friedman said was basically looked at the state and said, so this hinges on marriage. And the state said yes. And he said, so what it sounds like to me is you guys need to challenge the marriage amendment. And we all kind of looked at each other and went, he just did not suggest that we challenge gay marriage. And he did.
Jane Rouse and April DeBoer say they talked about it. Here they are, both nurses, both going to school, and suddenly they find themselves in the middle of the most controversial issue in the LGBT community.
We were not looking for the marriage amendment fight. This has never been about us getting married. This has been about our rights and our children's rights and protecting them. You know, it's one thing when you're looking at second parent adoption. You know, this is about the kids. People see it about the kids. When you start talking about the marriage amendment, it's more about our relationship and what we want. And that gets a little bit scarier because people are a little more opinionated about a marriage, a gay marriage, than they are about children having two parents.
You know, one of the things that we discovered when we started this was how many people did not know that we couldn't jointly adopt. And once we explained it to them, then they were outraged. You know, they were like, I can't understand, you know, why, and in this day and age that's just dumb.
They've also run into people who tell them they're wrong. They have no business trying to upset traditional marriage.
People say, well, you're looking for special rights. It's hard to explain to them that we're not looking for special rights. We're looking for equal rights that you already have and you take for granted.
And April DeBoer says the anger some people direct at them is really surprising to her.
Why are so many people so involved in denying us things? We don't care. We don't care what you do with your life. We don't care what you do in your bedroom. Why do you care so much about what we do? I don't get it.
So there they are, trying to be good moms to their kids, trying to make sure their kids are protected. They don't understand why the state of Michigan is trying to make that impossible. Well, there's a story behind that. It used to be judges did approve joint adoptions for same-sex couples. About a decade ago, judges stopped after a controversial move by a Supreme Court justice. Nancy Wheeler is a judge in Washtenaw County who used to preside over the juvenile court where adoptions are recognized. She granted dozens of what are called second parent adoptions to same-sex couples.
I thought that it was an outrage that we encouraged and in fact had a lot of gay and lesbian foster parents, but didn't allow both parties to adopt the children. So these children had been in foster care with these same parents, sometimes for a number of years, and then they were adopted by one.
She reasoned if one person could be an adoptive parent, then two people could. Her successor in the Washtenaw County Juvenile Court continued the practice. It was about the only court in the state granting joint adoptions. Then things got sketchy. In 2002, Mara Corrigan was the Chief Justice of the Michigan Supreme Court. According to reports at the time, she contacted the chief judge of the Washtenaw County Court and told him to put a stop to those second parent adoptions. And he tried. The juvenile court judge refused. So the chief judge of the county took over the adoptions himself and then stopped it. Judge Wheeler says she thinks the interference by the Supreme Court was out of line.
They were fiddling in a case where a judge had made a decision, had followed a process. And if it was wrong, they should have waited for someone to appeal it.
We've been unable to determine whether there's any judge in Michigan who will grant joint adoptions to same-sex couples today, or how that issue might be complicated by that constitutional amendment banning same-sex marriage or similar unions. Jay Kaplan is an attorney with the American Civil Liberties Union. He says he sees nothing in the law actually stopping judges from granting the joint adoptions.
The law doesn't say that, and there's no Michigan case law that says that. Our adoption law doesn't make any mention about gay people adopting. There's language in our adoption law that says if someone's married, that their spouse needs to join in on the adoption petition, which makes sense. If you're married and you're living together, you're probably going to be raising this child together. What has happened is that some judges have read this requirement that the spouse has to join in the petition as meaning that only married couples can jointly adopt. We totally disagree with that interpretation.
And Kaplan says the state of Michigan's interpretation of not granting joint adoptions means less security for those adopted kids. Anti-gay rights activists agree kids do better in a two-parent household, but they oppose allowing that second person to be the same gender. Gary Glenn with the American Family Association Michigan says second-parent adoptions by gay or lesbian parents would hurt kids.
I'm just saying every social science study ever done says that the healthiest environment in which a child can be raised is by a mother and a father who are committed to each other and to the children in marriage. We should not encourage relationships which on purpose deny a child either a mother or a father.
Well, not every study says that. Emily Devendorf is managing director at Equality Michigan. She says a lot of studies are cited indicating children do better when they have a mother and a father, but there are also studies that indicate kids with two fathers or two mothers do just as well or better.
So at the very least, all studies seem to be pointing to the fact that what we need is two loving parents, and studies fall short in terms of determining what that gender combination is. Why do we care? We should care about the quality of the parent.
And that academic question plays out in real life. Amanda Shelton is an attorney. She and her partner are also lesbian moms. When they decided to have children, Amanda was the birth mother, and they went to another state to make sure her partner was a legal parent, too.
Frankly, it's weird. You know, I mean, it's weird to go through this adoption process, be interviewed by these people, asked all these questions when you're already parents to these children, you've always been parents to these children, but you have to jump through these hoops and, frankly, incur a lot of financial cost to make this happen.
She says prohibiting lesbian and gay couples from jointly adopting only hurts the kids. She says this is simply anti-gay bigotry, and the arguments against it don't stand up to scrutiny.
They're the same arguments that those people have always made. They are not new, and you can't argue with crazy. So if they don't want to deal with the reality that our families are here, they're here to stay, we're not going away. That's their choice, but we're not going away.
Coming up, is denying civil rights to lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people a matter of preserving religious liberties? And if so, whose religious liberties? We'll look at that aspect in 10 minutes on Unequal by Law, Being Gay in Michigan. From Michigan Radio, this is Unequal by Law, Being Gay in Michigan. I'm Lester Graham. Same-sex marriage is the big issue getting all the headlines, but lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people know it's not the most significant issue in their lives. If the pollsters are right, here's something you probably don't know. In Michigan, it's perfectly legal to discriminate against gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people. A Gallup poll reported nearly 9 out of 10 polled think LGBT people are already protected. They're not. And according to the pollsters, 3 out of 4 people believe they should be protected.
So there's a gap between what people believe is right and what they believe is real and what is actual reality.
Leslie Fritz is with the Michigan Department of Civil Rights. The Elliott Larson Civil Rights Act is Michigan's law to prohibit discrimination. It includes protections for religion, race, color, national origin, age, sex, height, weight, family status, and marital status. But Fritz says if you're gay, you're just out of luck.
If you are gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgendered in Michigan, you can be fired because of it. In fact, you can be fired because you are perceived to be, whether you are in reality or not. You can be denied a place to live or kicked out of where you do live. You can be denied a public accommodation. For example, you can be turned away from a restaurant or a hotel.
A business could put up a straights-only sign in the window. And even closeted LGBT people can be fired on the spot if they're found out. Greg Moore has spent his career in healthcare helping people. He is gay. He didn't always let people know his sexual orientation. Even though he tried to keep it quiet, he was unintentionally outed at work by a friend and remembers what his supervisor told him when he was called into the office.
Well, Greg, we have problems with your sexual preference. We have problems with that, with you being in with male patients taking care of them. I said, I've been doing this for a lot of years, and I never had any complaints, and I just got employee of the month, and now you're firing me? I was devastated.
Moore was fired that day because he is gay, all perfectly legal. He says driving home, he cried so hard he ran off the road and crashed his pickup truck. Although it was years ago, getting fired solely because he was gay is still devastating to him, and he worries about other LGBT people who might face the same kind of discrimination.
If I can reach one person, one young person who gets fired from their job for being gay or lesbian, do not commit suicide. You just fight it. Make others educated about the issue.
That kind of discrimination could be ended if the state legislature added sexual orientation and gender expression as protected categories under the Elliot Larson Civil Rights Act. It's been attempted a few times. It's never gotten enough votes. Jay Kaplan is with the American Civil Liberties Union of Michigan. He says this not only hurts the LGBT community, but it's bad policy that hurts the state's economy.
Our leaders are doing such a disservice economically to our state by their continuing to have policies to say to certain groups of people, you're not on the same level as us. You're not wanted. You're not going to be treated fairly.
Kaplan argues the private sector is way ahead of the politicians on this issue. Many Fortune 500 companies, including the automakers of this state, decided long ago to implement policies against LGBT discrimination.
They've realized that not only is that the right thing to do, it's good business practice. You want to recruit and retain the best and brightest employees in a competitive market, you have to recognize the diversity of your employment staff.
And some municipalities, a couple dozen, have also passed local laws intended to protect LGBT people from discrimination. Several others are considering those kinds of protections. But the local laws are not often used. We looked at the past 5 years of complaints filed in Detroit, Kalamazoo, East Lansing, and Ann Arbor. We found very few formal complaints have been filed, and even fewer were resolved. Gary Glenn is with the anti-gay rights group American Family Association Michigan. He says the lack of documented complaints just shows there's no need for protections for gays and lesbians.
Homosexual advocacy groups have never been able to present one case, documentably, of somebody who lost a job or was denied service or housing on the basis of who they have sex with. So in that respect, it is a solution in search of a problem.
Advocates for the LGBT community say that's a bit of a catch-22. Not very many people know they can file complaints locally, and often complaints aren't pursued because the ordinances are limited to their own jurisdictions. In addition, Michigan is a so-called at-will state where businesses can fire a worker without cause and without explanation. So you can't really document those cases. But Gary Glenn says there's another side to this. He says employers shouldn't be forced to hire or keep on LGBT people.
We just don't think people should be forced to hire individuals whose behavior is at odds with the sincerely held religious convictions or values of the employer.
Glenn says there are jobs where employers would not want to hire a lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender person.
We don't believe that, for example, a Christian bookstore should be forced to hire some guy who claims to be a woman and wants to wear a dress to work and use the women's restroom. We don't believe that a Catholic school ought to be forced to hire an openly homosexual man as a football coach, for example.
Glenn says it would be an infringement of the employer's rights if Michigan were to guarantee civil rights protections for LGBT people. Emily Devendorf with Equality Michigan says it's against the law for businesses to discriminate against other people. She says the state should not sanction this kind of discrimination.
The sad fact is that Michigan is way behind when it comes to civil rights and is embarrassingly behind when it comes to sticking up for all Michiganders, especially the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender communities.
Discrimination against LGBT people is not limited to the workplace. Sometimes they're turned away from housing, even if they can afford the rent for an apartment or the mortgage for a home. In a widely cited report, Michigan's Fair Housing Center has found there is discrimination by landlords, real estate agents, banks, and others involved in housing, even in cities where laws prohibit discrimination based on sexual orientation.
We learned that 1 in 4 tests showed discrimination or evidence of discrimination based on sexual orientation. We have documented evidence of discrimination against same-sex couples.
Kristen Curran is with Fair Housing Center of Southeastern Michigan. She and her colleagues go undercover to check on complaints of suspicion of housing discrimination. In 2007, the 4 Fair Housing Centers investigated whether same-sex couples were being discriminated against in Michigan. This is one of the only studies of its kind in the nation. They sent out people representing themselves as gay or lesbian couples and others representing themselves as married heterosexual couples. The same-sex couples had higher educations, better incomes, better credit scores, things that would make them appear to be ideal applicants as tenants or buyers. Often for same-sex couples, mortgage rates were higher. Real estate agents steered same-sex buyers away from properties that heterosexual couples were encouraged to buy. The same-sex testers found some rental properties were suddenly no longer available, but they remained on the market afterward. Curran says she and a colleague portrayed a lesbian couple, and a staff member of an apartment complex made his feelings very clear.
Yeah, this is his quote is, "Two women don't bother me. It's two men I don't understand. I think it's gross. I have no problem with you girls. I kind of like it. I can totally get into that." And he proceeded again to tell us, "Oh, please call me anytime if you need anything to be fixed." But it was definitely really gross, and to use his word, it was creepy and inappropriate.
According to a report by ProPublica last year, instead of actively searching for landlords and agents who discriminate, federal officials open investigations only after complaints are filed. But most victims have no idea they've been discriminated against, which means they never demand an inquiry. Undercover testing is about the only way to find landlords, real estate agents, and bankers who are savvy enough to keep their sometimes discriminatory practices covert. And many of them know the local ordinances prohibiting discrimination against LGBT people are rarely used and rarely enforced.
I just think people don't know about the ordinances, and because they have such a varied penalty and not often used, landlords think they can discriminate, and they can.
Ironically, when Kristen Curran was younger, she and her partner were likely victims of this kind of discrimination. Curran had been offered a job in Saginaw right after grad school. Natalie Holbrook says the couple was looking at a studio apartment.
And the woman was showing us the apartment again, and she looked at me and asked me where I was going to sleep. And I looked at Kristen, and I said, "Well, I guess I'll have a futon out front here, and that's where I'll sleep." It was really uncomfortable. I felt very, it was embarrassing and weird.
They experienced that same kind of weirdness looking at another apartment when the landlord asked Holbrook why she was moving in with her friend. In both cases, the landlords turned them down. The landlord of the studio apartment suddenly remembered it was promised to a family member.
And I don't even know if I called it discrimination. I just was like, she didn't give us that apartment because we're gay, and she figured it out. And that's, or she thought it was inappropriate for two women to be staying together in a studio.
Even if it were discrimination, it is still legal in most cases in Michigan. Public polling and recent court cases have prompted greater discussion about adding protections for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people in Michigan's Elliott Larson civil rights law. Advocates for the change say it's time to stop legally discriminating against LGBT people. But others disagree. James Muffet is president of Citizens for Traditional Values. Muffet is against expanding Elliott Larson to protect LGBT people. He believes you don't have to list every type of person to be protected under the Elliott Larson Civil Rights Act.
Where do you stop the list? Do you put skinny people? You know, can you be fired for being skinny? Redheaded people or people who talk too loud? In other words, once you begin the enumeration process, which we feel like, you know, is a wrong way to go. Once you do that, where do you stop?
Under the Elliot Larson Act, you know, your examples of skinny people or people with red hair, you can interpret both of those things as already being protected because you can't be discriminated against because of your weight. You can't be discriminated against because of your ethnic background. So the question is, should U.S. citizens be discriminated against because of who they are? We don't do that with other groups.
Sure. So discriminatory hiring and firing, you know, is wrong, except for, and this is a real question, and I pose it back to you as a hypothetical, is it right for the government then to force you to fund or to pay for something that's morally reprehensible? And so this is a slippery slope down to violating the religious and the conscience rights of those who still hold that homosexuality is not a moral or, you know, a good thing for society and marriage specifically. That's where I feel like we're not talking about that aspect of this debate at all right now, and I feel like it's a big missing part of the equation.
That's something some Michigan legislators are talking about. At the state capitol, Representative Tom McMillan said he would not be in favor of expanding the state's civil rights protections to include LGBT people.
If you do that, then you force a photographer who's a Christian who believes homosexuality is a sin, you force them under the penalty of law to photograph a homosexual wedding. And you do the same to a baker who doesn't want to provide a cake to a homosexual wedding. I mean, you know, you force people to violate their conscience, you know, or else face penalty. And we've seen this in other states. So it's a bad idea. You know, discriminating against Christians is wrong, too, and you know, I don't think we need to put that into law.
Representative McMillan has been instrumental in curtailing or attempting to curtail protections for LGBT people that are already on the books. In the last session of the legislature, he backed a bill that would have banned any laws in cities and other municipalities that go beyond the Elliot Larson protections. Anti-gay rights advocates often note in 2004, the voters of Michigan approved a constitutional amendment banning same-sex marriage by a nearly 59% margin. They suggest that settled the issue. But the right to marry is not the same as the right to get a job, get housing, or the right to public accommodations such as hotels or restaurants. In those cities where those protections are in place, LGBT advocates say Representative McMillan and other anti-gay rights members of the legislature should honor the vote of the people in those cities, too. Antonio David Garcia was the executive director of the Kalamazoo Gay and Lesbian Resource Center in 2009 when that city voted to approve an anti-discrimination law.
And yet, when 64% of a city's population passes an initiative to protect gay people, he's perfectly willing to introduce a bill to overturn that public will. I find it extremely hypocritical and bigoted.
Garcia is now the CEO of Affirmations, based in Ferndale. He says legislators are actively working to deny equal treatment under the law to LGBT people.
Anytime somebody denies others rights that they themselves enjoy, they are hypocrites. And so all of it smells of hypocrisy.
Representative McMillan says it's not hypocrisy. He says those LGBT protections would violate the rights of people who object to homosexuality for religious reasons.
Well, I think, infringing on on Christian civil liberties is wrong, too. Being a bully to Christians, you know, bullying Christians is wrong, too.
Michigan legislators such as McMillan have pushed bills calling for what they call religious liberties or strong moral objections to homosexuality be honored through law. Not all Christians approve of using taxpayer money or the law to protect beliefs that ostracize gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender people. There are members of the clergy who officiate over vows between lesbian and gay couples, and once a year, that happens at the Capitol building.
I now recognize and acknowledge your holy union, and I pronounce you life partners. You may seal it with a kiss.
Every year in Lansing, during a gay pride festival, couples march to the state capitol to have their partnerships blessed.
Congratulations and blessings to all of you. Thank you.
Some Christians say their religion is being stained by bigotry against gay people.
You see that door, they're trying to shut me out. You feel that wind, they're trying to pull me down.
At a celebration for equality at Church of the Good Shepherd in Ann Arbor, Pastor Deborah Dean Ware told those gathered that the LGBT community is being battered by mean-spirited and hateful words.
The Christian voice has been hijacked, and Jesus has been hijacked, and we are interested in standing up strong as Christians as a voice of love, support, and care.
And some clergy believe there are those in the legislature trying to pass laws that protect discrimination based on religious liberties, but suppress the religious liberties of clergy who want to help same-sex couples. Reverend James Rodenheiser is the senior pastor and rector of St. Clair of Assisi Episcopal Church in Ann Arbor.
I think that gay couples and families should be recognized and provided the same legal and moral and ethical privileges that heterosexuals presume and take for granted.
Rodenheiser says a growing number of clergy of many faiths are realizing that same-sex couples who want to make a vow of faithfulness and love is a reinforcement of the values of marriage, not a threat to marriage.
So the religious liberty argument can be turned from a way to allow people to voluntarily restrict their own freedom to kind of holding everyone else hostage in the name of religious liberty. And that is not what Jesus was ever about.
The religion with the most followers in Michigan is the Catholic Church. It opposes same-sex marriage. Thomas Hickson is the vice president of public policy and advocacy for the Michigan Catholic Conference, which lobbies for the church.
Marriage, from the Catholic perspective, is between one man and one woman because that promotes the creation, the procreation of life.
It should be noted that a survey of Michigan voters last year found the majority of people who identified themselves as Catholic approve of same-sex civil unions or marriage. But that's not the church's official position, despite recent conciliatory comments from Pope Francis. And the Catholic Conference has political clout. According to a survey by Inside Michigan Politics, the largest religious group of legislators is Roman Catholic. They account for one-third of lawmakers. So when religious liberties are defended by the faithful in the Michigan legislature, a growing number of clergy in Michigan are wondering whose religious liberties those legislators think they are defending. Does the majority religion get protections from the state while others are not allowed by law to do what they believe is right? Coming up in about 10 minutes, the story of a father, a daughter, and what happens when he transitions to a woman on Unequal by Law, Being Gay in Michigan. From Michigan Radio, this is Unequal by Law, Being Gay in Michigan. I'm Lester Graham. It's amazing how quickly the conversation about lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people is changing. But part of the LGBT community is confusing to a lot of straight people, and really some gay and lesbian people. The T in LGBT, transgender people. These are people who could be born anywhere along a sexual spectrum. Male and female sexual organs don't always match up with the organ in our head. And for intersex people who are born with uncertain genitalia, the definitions of male and female don't mean that much. While the headlines scream the big LGBT issue of the day is marriage for lesbian and gay people, the issue for transgender people is more basic.
For trans people, it's the restrooms. The restrooms are our battlefield.
Meet Renee Knipe. She was once male and is now female. And that transition caused her employer to kind of freak out about which bathroom she could use because of the company's guesses about how people might react. Some people just see people like Renee as a guy who thinks he's a woman using the same bathroom as their little daughter. It implies pedophilia, a threat. Sometimes this idea is out of ignorance. Sometimes it's done out of bigotry to scare people. But why would someone who has gone to really great lengths to be a woman care about molesting your little girl? I mean, there's a logical fallacy there. But hey, it sounds really scary, so it's used. Anyway, Renee Knipe worked at a big box retailer, a discount store with a grocery. She was with corporate security, the people in plain clothes who monitor the store and catch shoplifters. She didn't wear a uniform or a vest or anything that identified her as an employee. But once corporate was alerted to her transition, human resource managers stepped in.
They wanted to spare the customers the discomfort. They also felt like it might make me uncomfortable. Speaking for me, even though I've been using women's restrooms for a long time outside of work, we just think you'll be more comfortable in the gender-neutral restrooms.
Keep in mind, transgender customers could use the restroom best suited to them, but not Knipe. She could not use the women's room. She could not use the men's room. She could only use the gender-neutral restroom if the store where she was working that day had one.
If you ever find yourself at a store that doesn't have a gender-neutral restroom, or a family restroom, as we called them, then you have to go somewhere where there is one, possibly the gas station. If there's not a gas station, you can get an escort to the women's room and have somebody stand watch. And if, you know, none of those things work, then you're either not going to use the restroom or you have to punch out and leave the property and go find a public restroom somewhere that you can use. This is the rule. If you break this rule, you're going to be fired.
Knipe thought, okay, this is ridiculous, but she'd be able to handle it. But as it turned out, it really wasn't that easy. The gender-free family restroom is a really busy place, and so there was a lot of waiting.
A 15 to 20 minute wait every time you have to use the restroom five times a day, 40 hours a week or plus, you're not doing what your body needs for itself. Sometimes I would get called away, and it would be hours before I got to the restroom after I needed to be there. I ended up with urinary tract infections started setting in.
The infections kept coming back. The company wouldn't budge. Then someone reported Knipe. She was accused of using the women's restroom. An investigation was launched. She was questioned. Her work colleagues were questioned.
Then they sat down and they watched video to see if they could verify my comings and goings to the restroom. This went on for a few days.
The video cleared Knipe. No unapproved restroom use.
As stupid as it was and as much as I hate that it happened at all and how humiliating it was, I don't know what would have happened if they couldn't have verified that, you know.
The restroom decree stood. Knipe filed an Equal Employment Opportunity Commission complaint, hoping some kind of better arrangement could be made, but that didn't seem to be going anywhere. Then the company eliminated the unit in which Knipe worked. They offered everyone a chance to apply for other jobs, but for some reason, corporate never seemed to find an interview for a position for Knipe because of the bathroom issue.
They had anchored me to a certain select number of stores with this restroom rule, and then they were punishing me for being anchored at those stores. I had already spent 2 years dealing with constant urinary tract infections, stress, depression, embarrassment. I signed the paperwork for the severance pay. I took the layoff. I dropped the EEOC complaint. And, you know, I just sort of let it end. I ran out of options and I didn't know what else to do.
That was in 2010. There's no happy ending here. When we last spoke, Renee Knipe was still unemployed. Of course, being allowed to use the appropriate bathroom is just the beginning of expressing your gender if you were born with a different gender.
People get really freaky on you when they can tell within a fraction of a second if you're a boy or a girl.
This is Joanna Smith. Joanna was born intersex. Basically, that means people born with sex chromosomes, external genitalia, or an internal reproductive system that is not considered standard for either male or female.
So I was born with some variations on a theme, if you will.
But Joanna's father wanted a boy, so they named the baby John. John, as a small child, behaved in a way that was typically female. That did not go over so well in preschool, so it was decided John could not advance to elementary school until he learned to socialize more appropriately. He was put in a room in the preschool basement and given art projects to fill his days. That year, he did learn a lesson.
It taught me that I had to be John, that there would be dire consequences if I didn't conform to the expectations. I wouldn't be educated, and I would be put in the basement by myself in solitary confinement. Talk about a motivator for a six-year-old.
John's mother protected him from discovery that he was different. For example, he was kept away from other kids. He had his own room at church camp. He didn't participate in gym in high school. He ended up being ostracized. He was the different one. He felt he was somehow broken. Once he reached college, he just wanted to succeed and be normal. He earned bachelor and master degrees in electrical engineering and played the expected male role.
Met someone in college. A nice lady, and we got married. We had one daughter, Melissa.
But John struggled with being a guy. It was a lot to suppress his feminine side, and his daughter Melissa says her father was not always successful at that.
My mom used to complain that it seemed like sometimes he was just a different person, just totally a different person. And looking back on it now, he was a different person. Sometimes he'd be feeling like a guy, and sometimes he'd be feeling like a girl.
Ultimately, there was a divorce. Melissa says John had been a distant father, and the two did not talk for years. In his early 50s, John got cancer, prostate cancer, a particularly aggressive form. At one point, John was put on androgen deprivation therapy. The goal is to reduce levels of male hormones called androgens to prevent them from reaching prostate cancer cells. For John, suppressing those male hormones was like freedom. He felt female, and he says it was like heaven for him. John made the decision to be Joanna. Surgeries were performed to clarify reproductive organs, but changing behavior and appearance from male to female was a longer process, and the reaction was not always good. Presenting as female, she was declined the use of John's credit card at retail stores. Some colleagues at work did not approve.
I was terminated from my job as an electrical engineer, I believe, twice because of this issue. I can't get into the specifics because there are termination agreements that I have signed, and I cannot give you any specifics whatsoever.
What has become clear to Joanna is there are people who really get worked up about other people who don't perfectly match either male or female behavior or expression. She says the LGBT community calls them the gender police.
The gender police are folks that have some kind of a problem. And the existence of people that are questioning their gender, that are working through issues, is a problem for them. And they have to get rid of them.
Transgender people are the most likely to be attacked or murdered among people in the LGBT community. But even for people who are accepting, it can be difficult. Joanna says daughter Melissa and she have had to make some adjustments.
We've shared some tears. And we've had to say goodbye to John. That was tough on us both. But John never existed. John was the figment of a six-year-old's imagination that grew into a persona that kept me safe.
It's hard sometimes. It jogs in my head. It took me a while to be comfortable with, she is my father. I have a hard time figuring out how to introduce her sometimes. This is my parental unit. Because to me, she's my dad.
It's difficult to say that I am her father. I don't look like a father. I don't go back to John. I won't go back to John. I couldn't go back to John if my life depended upon it.
One point daughter Melissa Smith makes is that her father, John, was distant. Father and daughter were not that close, but things have changed.
Honestly, I like Joanna better, so she's more emotional. She's more connected. She cares more. She's there. She's present. And I have to imagine that living so long as who you aren't would disconnect you. And every once in a while, I see him in her, and it's a little sad.
I regret that, because for a daughter to have her father is an important thing. But fathers die, and life goes on. The difference for Melissa is that she now has Joanna in her life. And I can do what I can.
Thank you.
Many people are just coming to grips with the idea that not everyone fits neatly into male and female identities, or that sexual orientation fits into our personal definitions of normal. But as the public discusses this, as more of our friends, our neighbors, our coworkers feel safe enough to come out of the closet, people appear to be getting more comfortable with different ideas of sexual orientation and sexual identity. The LGBT community has been just a little astonished at the rapid changes in public attitudes in recent months. As more awareness is raised, many straight people are astonished when they learn that the state of Michigan condones discrimination against someone just because of their sexual orientation or gender expression. And it's becoming less an issue of partisan politics. It's true the Republican Party platform opposes gay marriage and the Democrats support it, but many Republican leaders have come out in favor of marriage equality for gay and lesbian couples.
None of us would want to be told we can't marry the person we love. That's why a growing majority of Americans believe it's time to allow marriage for gay and lesbian couples.
When couples are committed.
This ad from the Respect for Marriage Coalition features comments from former First Lady Laura Bush, former Secretary of State Colin Powell, and former Vice President Dick Cheney, all supporting gay marriage. Recently, former President George H.W. Bush and Barbara Bush were official witnesses for a lesbian couple who married. Polling shows in Michigan the number of people who support marriage equality for lesbian and gay couples is growing. Charles Ballard is a professor at Michigan State University, and he conducted a poll in late 2012.
What we found was 55.5% were in the approve category. And of those, it was about evenly divided between strongly approve and somewhat approve.
So more than half of the people in Michigan, a good deal more than half, approve of gay marriage.
39% were in the disapprove category. But there it was overwhelmingly strongly disapprove. So those who approve, some of the folks are somewhat approving, some of them are strongly. But if you disapprove, you're very likely to strongly disapprove.
Emily Devendorf with Equality Michigan says that's quite a change since Michigan residents voted to amend the state constitution 9 years ago. That amendment defined marriage as only between one man and one woman.
In just those years since the 2004 ban was put into place, there has been a complete reversal in terms of the public position on this issue. 59% were in favor of the ban at the time, and at this point, depending on what poll you look at, 56 to 57% are in favor of both repealing the ban and replacing it with full marriage equality for LGBT citizens. So I think that Michigan is ready.
So Michigan public opinion has moved 15% in the last decade toward accepting gay marriage, and Devendorf is banking on the trend continuing. She's working with other LGBT organizations to put the issue up for another vote.
Yes, I believe the votes absolutely will be there in 2016 for us to repeal that constitutional ban. So we do intend to collect the necessary signatures, put those on the ballot, and we do intend to win.
Devendorf says this summer's U.S. Supreme Court rulings help. The court did away with the Defense of Marriage Act and expanded the federal government's recognition of same-sex marriage. At the same time, several states have legalized gay marriage. Devendorf says all of those things have set the stage for reversing Michigan's gay marriage ban. The man who co-wrote that amendment, officially known as the Marriage Protection Amendment, disagrees. Gary Glenn with American Family Association Michigan says a challenge will fail.
We're confident that if it were on the ballot anytime in the foreseeable future, Michigan voters will vote against repealing the Marriage Protection Amendment. So we don't think Michigan voters' feelings on this have changed. And the other thing that's consistent with the polling data is that opposition to homosexual marriage seems to soften when there's no real immediate threat of it being implemented as a matter of law. And then when there is, opposition seems to go up.
Polling shows most of the opposition to gay marriage is among older people, while younger people tend to accept the idea. That's led some to believe overturning Michigan's gay marriage ban is inevitable. But Gary Glenn doesn't believe that.
I think it was Winston Churchill who quipped that if you were under 30 and you weren't a liberal, you didn't have a heart, but that if you were over 30 and you weren't a conservative, you didn't have a brain. So whatever polling data may show about young people today, I don't think necessarily translates into what they'll think about issues like this when they're older. So we're confident that the people of Michigan will keep the Marriage Protection Amendment in place, and it's what's best for society.
The question left for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people is whether the citizens of Michigan agree with that, whether it's okay to continue to ban same-sex marriage, refuse to serve a gay man at a restaurant, okay to fire a lesbian from her job, deny a hotel room to a same-sex couple because they are unequal by law. Unequal by Law, Being Gay in Michigan, was written and produced by Lester Graham, edited by Sarah Hewlett. Production help came from Vincent Duffy, Lindsay Smith, Kyle Norris, Mercedes Mejia, Jennifer Guerra, and Jake Neer. The executive producer is Tamar Charney. The documentary is a production of Michigan Watch at Michigan Radio.